Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Central Ohio real estate market was poised for another strong year when COVID-19 struck, at the heart of a business sector intimately tied to the economy and good employment numbers. The National Association of Realtors reported that pending home sales dropped 20% in March. In Central Ohio, weekly showings are down more than 20% from last year. The financial toll of record unemployment has rippled across the nation, with nearly 4 million homeowners now either stopping mortgage payments or seeking relief. Today, we're talking about how the Central Ohio real estate market has responded to these early days of the pandemic, and we look ahead. Todd Helpbringer is president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Great. Thank you, Ann.
And Cynthia McKenzie is a realtor with Keller Williams Capital Partners and the CIMAC Group. Welcome back, Cynthia. And Rob Vogt is a real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights. He joins us by Skype. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, Ann. Good to be here.
Rob, let's just get a bird's eye view. In December, we were talking about how Columbus was the only Midwestern metro area among 10 housing markets projected to outperform the rest of the country. And I'm wondering, does that previously strong market provide a buffer at this point?
Well, quite frankly, and I think that everybody is really just on hold at this point. I think it's really tough to determine that we've actually had some advantage because of the strong housing market that we had previously. Frankly, I just think that a lot of folks are right on the sidelines and really don't want to do anything until they figure this whole thing out. And it probably makes for a pretty good strategy. So even though we had a fantastic housing market prior to this crisis, and I expect us to have a pretty strong housing market after we figure this all out, it's just going to take that time to figure it out and figure out where we are right now.
What do you mean by figure it out? I mean, what does that even mean?
Well, I think what it means is how does this disease resolve itself? Are we going to be locked down in the situation that we're currently in for a long time? Or are we going to be able to go out and shop for houses and look at apartments? How is it going to affect really how people function in either buying a house or renting an apartment in the future? So that's sort of what I mean by that. The other piece of this is that with a 20 or 25% unemployment rate, there's going to be a lot of folks who can no longer qualify for the housing that they were seeking earlier. So, you know, those are kind of the issues that I think we're going to have to deal with. And as I said, figure it all out.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Rob Vogt. He's a real estate analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights. Also with us, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer, and Cynthia McKenzie. She's a realtor with Keller Williams Capital Partners and the CIMAC Group. If you have a question or comment about the housing market, what if you want to put your house on the market? What if you want to take it off? What about a mortgage? What about all of this in the age of COVID-19? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Todd Helpbringer, what about the mortgage industry itself? Well, if you don't mind, I mean, what have you experienced since March?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of fluctuation, I'll say, at the least. So rates have really dropped dramatically. We had days where we were under 3% on a 30-year fixed, which is really unheard of. That was just due to the volatility of the market. We have experienced a lot of refinancing, non-cash out. And again, to Rob's point, that we still have been working with clients, even on the purchase side. There's been quite a bit of purchase going on. Everyone has been apprehensive on appraisals. You know, some of the appraisers won't go in the houses anymore, so we're able to do drive-by appraisals. I mean, the industry is still trying to adapt to continue to move forward, and we have. The things that really changed for the client that we have to ask them repeatedly is that, is your employment affected? Is there a looming layoff? Has your salary dropped? We have to verify their employment almost three times in during the application, and then right before for the closing, we have to verify again that they know of no looming layoffs, and they sign a document to that effect too.
We've heard about mass cancellations of closings because of so many people suddenly unemployed.
Well, we as a company, as a bank, we've experienced on my side of it only really two, where we had two purchases getting ready to happen, and two of the clients lost their employment like 4 days right before closing. That has happened. I think going to closings has changed some. So the title companies have done a great job with social distancing and doing what they call even car closings, where the clients will be in their car and the closer will be outside passing documents back and forth. They've really reduced the number of people in a closing. Sellers go separately, buyers go separately, and a lot of times us as lenders, and Cynthia can probably speak of this also, some of the realtors aren't going to the closings either. We're available by phone, but just one less body there is probably not a bad idea.
I'm usually in the parking lot.
Pardon me?
I'm in the parking lot usually with my clients, but not in the car with them. So I definitely still attend closings. I just might not be as close.
We're talking about, you know, we've heard stories about how it's changing for people who are in a position to buy, how they're going about the process. There's a lot more virtual tours, that kind of thing. But I can't imagine buying a house without actually walking through it. And someone has to inspect it, right, Cynthia?
Correct. And for us, at least in Central Ohio, there is still a fair amount of visiting homes in person. And what that looks like is maybe if you're the buyer, you don't bring your kids along. You don't bring a family member along. So it's really just the buyer and the realtor. So the decision maker and the realtor, we wear masks, we wear gloves, we walk around with a Clorox wipe. I ask my clients to put their hands in their pockets. I will open anything they want opened with a Clorox wipe. So showings are still happening. Also, 99% of the time, there's only one realtor and client allowed in the house at one time. And prior to this, there might have been four realtors in a house at one time with clients in a showing hour. So that's definitely changed. Fair amount of my buyers are moving here from out of state for jobs. And so in that case, like last night, I went down to Grandview and I videoed a home, sent them the video. Then if they're still interested, I'll go back with them on FaceTime and get the answers that they need to make a decision to buy. But they will not be able to come in town to buy a house because if they leave and go back to Florida, they then have to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Right.
And so that gets very difficult.
Wow.
And a lot of our sellers have already moved, so a lot of vacant houses. So if somebody's moved to a retirement home 6 months ago and they were getting their house ready to sell, you know, maybe paint and carpet, we're walking through a vacant house at that point. So that's very doable as well.
Okay, gotcha. Rob Vogt, I mean, the housing stock is in a much different place than it was at the beginning of the recession, for example. That's not a key player, that it was back then. Does that make a difference?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, we were, prior to this crisis, we had a huge shortage of housing. A study that we had completed for the Building Industry Association had indicated that we were underbuilding by about 8,000 units across Central Ohio, and we've not approached those numbers. So we have had a real deficit, and we just didn't have enough houses to support all the jobs that were created. As Cynthia pointed out, where she has a client coming in for a job, what will be interesting is how it affects the housing market is, you know, are we going to continue to see job growth after, or at least as this crisis abates somewhat? So how that's going to affect the housing market, I think, brings into a lot of question. But we had a really significant demand on both sides, both on the rental side and on the for sale side, that we simply weren't meeting the needs of Central Ohio. What's interesting now is on the rental side, at least, that you've got essentially folks not moving at all, that they are staying put where they are. And we've got a lot of apartment units that are going to be coming online. And historically, what we've been able to do is create enough jobs and enough household growth to support these new rental housing units. That's going to bring into some question in terms of all these units to start to get released into the market, where we're not going to have the kind of new households that we had previously. So, you know, from a housing perspective, that's going to be one interesting thing that we're going to see in terms of the housing market and how people respond to that. On the rental side, I think we're going to see some rent specials coming up. We're going to see some giveaways. And we're going to see vacancies increase because we simply aren't creating the jobs that we did prior to this crisis.
Creating the jobs that they were expecting.
That's right.
Prior.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've been driving around Hilliard. There's a huge thing going up here at Ackerman and on Ackerman and Olentangy River Road. It's kind of stunning, the construction of rentals.
Oh, absolutely.
They're
we've talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
Of how strong the rental housing market was here in Central Ohio and the fact that we were building so many apartments to meet that housing demand. The other interesting aspect of all of this is, and some of the research has suggested that people are feeling quite trapped in their smaller apartments. You know, when we talked about micro units in the past and studio units, you know, when you're living in 400 square feet and you're stuck in your house,
yeah.
You begin to think about maybe I should become a homeowner in the suburbs someplace. So, you know, that's another factor that at least going forward, and that's why I was talking about trying to figure this whole situation out. What does that mean to the housing market? Are we going to see a lot more folks making a decision to move to the suburbs because they want the space? And it will be interesting to keep an eye on that.
Because going forward, we know, number one, this pandemic's not over with by a long shot. And furthermore, they say there's more to come. This could become more of a way of life.
That's right. That's right. And how's that going to affect folks' lifestyles? I mean,
yeah.
You know, we know that people were attracted to downtown and downtown neighborhoods because it presented such a walkable, vibrant lifestyle. Well, that lifestyle has completely died out at this point. So people are beginning to think, hey, maybe it makes more sense to live in the suburb, buy a house, live in the suburbs, have a big yard, and I can, you know, stay at home.
Hey, Rob, what do you think about, like, let's say all those apartments, people being so close together, that's probably going to have thought through on construction side.
We've
always
absolutely
talked about how much that
that's why I'm saying happening. This whole thing is that people are beginning to rethink their entire lifestyle and what that means in terms of how they're going to live and the kind of housing they're going to consume. So there's so many question marks that have arisen out of this whole crisis on how people are going to respond. And it'll be really interesting to keep an eye on the housing market over the next, probably 16 to 24 months to figure out how are we going to respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wonder if we're going to have a tick down in values because of this then also.
How?
It's been very strong in appreciation.
You know, but that presents the question, though, if we have all of this brand new interest in for sale housing for a house, single family house, and folks make the decision to move out, and you know, we already knew we had a shortage of for sale homes in the past that we just weren't created enough for sale housing. You know, it potentially could create the opposite direction, that we have appreciation because now we have this whole base of potential apartment renters who now want to become homeowners. And you know, so that's why I'm saying it's so hard to determine what the future is going to hold for us in terms of housing.
Well, and plus they may go ahead, Cynthia.
In the short term, that's exactly what's happening, Rob. Prices are going up fast in single family housing. We already were going into the year with light housing inventory. Now you've got less people going on the market and first-time home buyers looking at these 3.5% interest rates, they want to buy if they have job security. Everything that you've just said, and it's very tough to find a house to purchase.
And Cynthia, you're seeing a big decline in listings at this point, that folks that were thinking about selling their house in the spring have said, I'm going to put it off. I don't need to go through this hassle right now. So you have the combination of fewer listings and increased demand that's just going to potentially raise prices over the short term.
Correct. And we're already seeing that. And, you know, if I'm a home seller that has two kids that I'm trying to homeschool and I'm all of a sudden working from home, putting your house on the market and moving to that step up house seems a little overwhelming. I think once they get into that rhythm and they realize if this can go on for a year, year and a half, they might end up wanting to sell it and do that anyway. But correct, right now it's definitely, we have a housing shortage, single family home.
Hey, Cynthia.
Hey, Todd.
So how many people are you seeing because they're stuck in their house or saying, I don't want to move now, I'm just going to update my house? You know, because when you're trapped in that house all the time, you say, well, I'll change this, I'll change that. Yeah.
contractors that I work with that do, you know, home renovations, they're telling me they've never been busier with phone calls, you know, because people are spending so much time in their house. They're like, well, if we're going to be here more, maybe we need to do X, Y, and Z. Uh-huh. But what I'm seeing is what Robert alluded to is the rethinking of what I told you I was looking for 6 months ago and what I'm looking for now. I need more space. I need a home office. I need a bigger yard. So people are definitely rethinking absolutely everything.
We're going to talk more about that. We're talking about Central Ohio real estate today. That's Cynthia McKenzie. She's a realtor with Keller Williams Capital Partners and the CIMAC Group. Also with us, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights, and Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Questions or comments about the market? We have some. Are you preparing to make a change? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about real estate today, buying, selling, renting, you name it. Still with us, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights. Also, Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, and Cynthia McKenzie, realtor with Keller Williams Capital Partners and the CIMAC Group. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Todd Helpbringer, I wanted to get your thoughts about how different what we're heading into now is not pretty, no matter what. Economically, the economy is going to crash and burn unless there's a miracle. but the mortgage business isn't at the center of it like it was the last time. In fact, it's the mortgage business seems to be trying to help people.
Yes, I mean, I think I got a comment first. And Cynthia got cut off.
Yeah, I know. We're working on that.
Okay, she just texted me. Sorry. Yeah. All right. So I think the mortgage side is getting some assistance, yeah, because, again, and so is the rental side, where they're trying to help out people, you know, giving them some money to make payments, et cetera. I think that's going to help stabilize everything. You know, I think ultimately, you know, I heard your earlier comment. I hope this is not the norm, but you're fearful of that. I think if we get over this and hopefully learn some more cleaning habits, this will get through and not have to deal with this in years to come. I think Rob has a good point. I think it's going to lean more towards where people are going to move from all these downtown areas. And I worry about that because it took so long for those downtown areas, like the downtown Columbus area, to be so vibrant.
Yeah.
And now if people feel like, I don't want to be on top of my neighbor in a condo, now what are they going to do? And again, that will be good for, you know, people moving into the suburbs. But that downtown was finally getting some real traction. And now what's going to happen? We're going to be back to where at 5 o'clock the streets roll up and that's it?
Right.
I hope not.
I do too.
Todd, how prevalent has it been that people have asked for that they don't have to make their mortgage payment and just adding it to the end of their loan? Is that prevalent? And is that a strategy at least some of the folks who are really seriously economically affected should consider? And how would they go about doing that?
So us as a bank, we've dealt a lot with that internally. We've had a lot of loan modifications. We'll modify or do interest-only payments. I have not seen a lot of it on the residential side of my company where people have called and asked for forbearance on that. I know a lot of lenders have addressed it, and pretty much all of them, if asked, you have to contact the current servicer. They're doing 90 days pretty much without any questions, just allowing that 90-day reprieve. Some lenders want it to be an interest-only payment. Some of them are saying no payment. As you had mentioned, Rob, we'll add it to the end of the loan. So that it's add another 3 months on. Again, it's easily obtained. I think if, again, you call your servicer, they probably won't ask you a whole lot of questions because it's, again, given to almost anybody right now.
Let's. We've got callers with questions. John in West Jefferson, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hello.
Go ahead.
My mother recently passed last week, and in her will said that the house was to be sold and then the proceeds divided up between three kids. Would it be better to try to hold out for a higher price or to sell quickly at a lower price?
Who wants to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I'll jump in there
Todd Helper
before Cynthia gets back on. Well, I think, you know, listen to what Cynthia said. Oh, yeah, I'm back on. I was going to say Cynthia said that, you know, values are going back up. So it might be an idea to test the waters now and see how things work versus waiting. I think anytime you could do something, do it now and give it a shot and see what happens.
And I think the market is so localized. I think you call your favorite realtor for a consult and just get the information, and they will help you make the best decision.
Cynthia, given the situation that we're in today, and they're going to have a vacant house, does it make sense to stage that house, or is it just better to try to market it as a vacant house, maybe with white walls and clean carpets, or what would your suggestion be to somebody like that?
Well, again, I think it depends on the house and the location and the market and the inventory. I think staging can be beneficial for certain houses in certain times. I do think buyers love a vacant house right now because they know they can move right into it. They know nobody's been living in it. So that's not necessarily a disadvantage at this point.
Okay. John in West Jefferson, sorry about your mother's death. Sorry about that. And thanks for your call. It's a good question. Gerald in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Gerald.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to make a comment, actually, to say that I had a great real estate agent because, of course, I didn't know we were going to have all this going on. So I started looking out for a condo down here in the Cincinnati area in late February.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, Fifth Third Bank and all of us going through the process. And we're actually going to meet the 45-day thing. We're going to close next week. So my advice, I think it's a service somebody just say that, is that the real estate agent, well, of course, the mortgage loan officer, if they're fairly helpful with the process, because, of course, a lot of stuff we did online, and then my printer went out, so I had to go to my brother's house to use it, and then I called my real estate agent. Then my real estate agent said, well, come by the office, and you can use our scanner, and then I went by their office, did the scanner, signed the document, sent it to the bank. So I just think that's a positive thing at this time that we're all in this together, and some of those people in those professions know what we're going through. So the best helpful stuff you can do, and you know, all the things that my real estate agent did for me was pretty successful for me.
Yeah,
that's all I want to add.
Congratulations on your new condo.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting, Gerald. Congratulations, right? Thanks for that. There is, it sounds corny, but there is this all, we're all in this together kind of a feeling right now, Rob. How long do you think that lasts?
You know, you're right about that. And I think the folks have become more pleasant because they do know that we're all in this together, and every professional and non-professional that I've talked to recently just seem to have a more pleasant attitude towards things because we know we can't change what we're into. We've got to all figure this out together, and eventually we're going to get through it. So it not only affects the real estate market, but our entire life. So let's live with it.
The how much does the business, the commercial real estate market, how different is that from the residential, Rob?
Boy, Todd, you and I were talking about that before we got on the air. You probably have better insight.
Tell us, Todd, what?
Well, I think that there's a lot of uncertainty in the commercial market right now. Why? If you're buying a four-unit property or a building, are tenants going to be able to move in? Are tenants going to be able to pay? So, you know, we as a bank, you know, again, we have more cautious of what properties we're looking at, rents, how are people be able to manage. Our concern is more of, again, the values, because if tenants can't pay rent, then that's probably going to drive the value down. So we're just taking a more cautious stance and again, just looking at the clients and if they have a good cash position to kind of weather a storm. I think that's just the right thing to do right now.
You know, more on the commercial side, Todd, too, don't you think that with us all working from home, that it's going to essentially redesign the office environment that we're into? Are we going to need as much office space as we've got, which means we're going to need less office space? And how's that going to affect the commercial market? Or even on the retail side, there's so many restaurants closing down permanently and the entire retail environment changing as it is. I think we're probably going to see more changes in the commercial real estate market than we are on the residential side.
Yeah, I would agree. The commercial / residential, the apartments, I think that's going to be one issue. But I think I agree with your comment. Office buildings. My concern is, you know, if people are going to start working from home and figuring that out, will you need that, you know, 50,000 square foot office building for all your cubicles? You know, how is that going to look?
Well, so I mean, the spacing is going to be different in the office buildings, too.
Yeah. And how well we've all adapted to it. Sure, working from home has its challenges. I know we're still in our office. I always practice 25-foot buffer. So,
fine.
So I was fine.
Hang on.
We're still here.
Let's see. Peter in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Peter.
Thank you. There's a company called Cushman & Wakefield that I saw from – it's from the United States, but this is a Netherlands video, and it showed what the new office will look like, and it was just amazing seeing going up in an elevator. You're staying in a little circle, and then it tells you on the floor where to go and to stay away from certain areas. It looks like one big hassle, and so I think that not only commercial real estate is going to change, but things like malls or strip malls, I think the reappraisal of those places is going to be a huge difference. There's a man called Carl Icahn. He's a famous investor and he's just put up $5 billion with a bet against the commercial mortgage paper on malls. And it's very fascinating because that's going to change everything. All the trends that you guys are talking about, it's fascinating because in New York, people are really thinking, you know, there's even companies now, one called Suburban Jungle, you know, trying to transition people from a city apartment out to the suburbs. I mean, I think it may make a big change.
Wow.
Well, and that's why I was talking about we're trying to figure this all out. What does it really mean in terms of the long-term implications on the real estate market, and how does it affect commercial and how does it affect residential? I mean, if you think about it, if we do develop a vaccine, as we all hope we do very soon, we could be back to normal conditions in a very short time period. But if we don't, it's going to change real estate completely.
It's interesting or ironic, I don't know what, maybe I'm not, it's neither of those things, but that I started talking to you guys, Rob and Todd, back in, I think it was 2008, when the housing market crashed. And I think that's when we first started talking, and it's been this interesting journey with you as the market's grown and grown and grown and changed, you know, so much in the last 8 years as far as this move to more concentrated living situations and now this.
Is it ironic that the 2008 was almost self-inflicted?
Yes.
You know, we did this to ourselves by allowing these crazy mortgages, and here, now, these years later, this is not self-inflicted, but it still has the same outcome, if not worse.
Yeah.
This is not financial. This is, you know, so it is funny because you always hope that we as a society learn. Okay, you do this, you learn. Whoever thought, and again, you see movies about the viruses, but whoever thought a virus would do this much damage?
Is there any lessons from 2008 that are helping us today, Todd?
I
Okay, well, go ahead, Cynthia.
Well, first, thanks for inviting me to the conversation. I was not involved in 2008, but I love being here. and, you know, I think we did learn some lessons from 2008 because my buyers that are coming and other realtors' buyers that are coming to the table to buy houses over the last 5-6 years have been wanting to put more money down versus looking for the no money down options. So I think buyers overall have been more cautious and conservative, where I think in 2004 and 2005 they assumed it would just go up so they could put no money down. So I do think in that case we're in a little better situation for some.
Yeah, Cynthia, you're 100% correct. All the lenders were betting on the come that these values will go up 10, 15, 20% a year. So if you put nothing down, as long as you can hang on for a year or two, we've got our equity position. Mm-hmm. That was just crazy, inflicting that on ourselves. I do agree, Cynthia. Most clients definitely are coming with a lot of them that I know you and I work with and other people around the area here are able to put down 10% or 20%. I know the refinances that we've gone through here lately, people are doing a lot of rate and term. So they have a lot of equity in their homes and they're just trying to better themselves. So
and you said they're not cashing out.
No. So here's a couple thoughts on that. Some people are, but the lenders in the last 5 or 10 days, some of them have added such a premium to the interest rate if you want to take cash out that it almost doesn't make sense.
Interesting.
So they're just hedging that a little bit. And again, I don't think it's going to be every lender out there. I can think of a few banks that we work with that they've made it so unattractive that you would not consider a cash out refinance right now. You would just do a rate and term.
Why are some incentivizing it and others are disincentivizing it? What's the difference?
Well, I think the issue they're coming up with is that their concern, in my opinion, is that values may be going down. So they don't want these people to get all this cash out and then all of a sudden, you know, not make the payment. That's just some of the speculation out there. Not every lender is doing it. I agree. But it is concerning of the ones I can think of that are doing it. I know there's a couple lenders in town here that have moved away from minimum down payments now are 10%. Whereas we still have banks that are doing 3% down and 5% down. So it's just each bank's their appetite for risk. Is that what they're assessing?
Interesting. Hey, before we take a break, Rob, could you talk about what Peter in Westerville was asking about as far as the reappraisals of malls? I mean, that's another huge thing in our society.
Well, sure. And there's a lot of money tied up in malls today. And with the complete change in the retail environment, we see vacancies, large vacancies in strip malls and malls in general. And what are we going to do with those spaces? So clearly the value of those have gone down dramatically over the past couple of years. And the current crisis has just accelerated that to the point where a lot of these, they've got to put them to some other use. I've often talked the potential to take a site like the Westland Mall site, for example, and redevelop that as a housing site. You know, these are the kinds of strategies that I think we're going to begin to see mall developers employ in order to make these, put these back into use. So it will be interesting to keep an eye on that. I did want to, Ann, if I have a second here, to talk a little bit about the Great Recession and contrasting that with the current situation. You know, the millennials are the ones who went through the Great Recession, and that really changed their attitude towards housing, that they were no longer interested in coming out, you know, growing up and buying a house. They lived in apartments, and that's why we had such a surge in apartments. Now we're the Zoomers, the Gen Z are the ones being affected by this current crisis, and how is that going to change their attitude towards housing? Is it going to take it and make them want to become homeowners with more space and a more yard, or are they going to continue to follow what happened with the millennials as a result of the Great Recession? So that's another factor I think is worth thinking about as we move forward.
Right. Listeners, those who have called in, we're going to get to all of your calls. All the questions look great. So stand by. We'll get to you. Thanks for your interest. I'll get to some emails as well. My guests, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights. Also, Todd Heltbringer, president of Heltbringer Mortgage Services, and Cynthia McKenzie with Keller Williams Capital Partners and the SciMat Group. So we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about real estate today in the age of COVID-19. Still with us, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights, Cynthia McKenzie with Keller Williams Capital Partners and the SIMAC Group, and Todd Helbringer, president of Helbringer Mortgage Services. Let's just get right to the calls because we've got some people out with some great questions. If I can get my act together here. Okay. Patrick in Lakewood, you're on the air. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, how you doing? Great discussion, everybody. I'm just wondering what the COVID virus is going to do. I have rental properties in Lakewood, Ohio, duplexes and single families, and I'm wondering how it's going to affect the rental market, the price charged and the willingness of people to move into those type of properties, because I'm already seeing people call from apartments and ask if I have units available because they want to get out of the apartment.
They want to get into a duplex, yeah.
Yeah, well, Lakewood is a dense city, mm-hmm. but there's mostly duplexes and single-family homes. And so you have the convenience of being in an urban area, but you also have, the space of being in a suburb. Mm. And also wondering what you think that the values are going to – What this whole thing's going to do on the values of single family and duplex type rentals?
Well,
I can go start, Rob.
The single family rental side had been already a strong piece of the market before this crisis, mainly because a lot of folks who would normally become homeowners just didn't have the down payment and the student debt issues. So we saw a very strong market for single family rentals.
Mm-hmm.
I think after this crisis is resolved, that it will continue to be a strong market with duplexes and single family rentals because of the fact that the families cannot continue to be qualified and they want the additional space. And as I was talking about earlier in the program, we're beginning to pick up the idea that folks want more space. And as a result, I think those kinds of units are going to be in high demand.
Also,
hey, Rob,
I'd like to add.
Go ahead, Cynthia. Sorry.
Oh, thanks. Investor buyers are still out there wanting to invest in real estate and buy single-family homes and duplexes to add to their portfolio, especially with what's happening with the stock market. It's a way to diversify.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
Oh, my goodness. Patrick, thanks for that call. Did you want to add something, Todd?
Well, I was just thinking, the one thing I think his duplexes and single families will do well in rent. Why? There's more separation versus if you bought, a 100-unit apartment complex and people are so dense, he's going to do better. The one thing I always consider is that the location that you are the people that are renters, how are they affected with, quote, being the essential workers or not? Because then you worry about, do you get a tenant in there? They can't pay. That's always the concern. But I think he'll do better because he's got that dense. He's not as dense. He has an outdoor area probably, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Let's see. Roger in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Ann. I'm an architect. We do mostly senior living. And just to kind of throw another whole variable in the mix, I think there's going to be maybe regulatory changes coming about how senior living is constructed and operated. But in the next year or two, people are going to be reluctant to move out of their homes and move into a assisted living facility or something, I think, just because of all the real problems they've had and with keeping people well.
Mm-hmm. Because they're congregate facilities.
Makes
you wonder about the mother-in-law apartment, if there'll be a boom in that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think it would also point to the potential for home health care as a bigger and bigger industry as we go forward. And we'll probably see smaller assisted living facilities, ones that aren't on the 60 or 80 bed range, down to maybe 20 beds, a little bit more intimate where you know who they are and you can kind of control the process a bit closer.
Thanks, Roger, for bringing up that depressing note. Let's see, Allison in the Lithopolis, you're on the air. Hi, Allison.
Hi, thank you. So I started the process of being a first-time home buyer just before all of the COVID closures began. And as the COVID closures happened, I was furloughed from my job. And now my mortgage lender is telling me that they cannot lend to me until I have one paycheck. And so I've been in this limbo for a little bit of me trying to buy this house and not sure if I'm making the right decision. And now the seller is coming back to me saying he will hold the house for me if I agree to pay more money. And I feel like I'm being maybe pushed around a little bit and not really sure what avenue to take with this being a first-time home buyer.
Cynthia, what do you think about that?
Well, Allison, I would start with perhaps, are you working with a realtor to help you with that?
Yes.
And if that's good, yeah. And I think the realtor and hopefully an attorney can help you kind of navigate that, you know, best practice going forward. That's such a specific situation. You know, in terms of, I'm sure the seller wants to see you have their house, and they're probably taking on some risk to wait, but you know, you've got to look out for yourself as well
and what you can afford.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, Allison, have you started back to work yet?
I have not. I'm in the restaurant industry, so I'm kind of in the later tier of reopening.
Okay.
So yeah, they
we see that.
One
yes, back to your
from
point
me.
Of furlough, they want to have at least one pay stub. So that is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really frustrating because we were already moving forward with it, and I was initially furloughed, and my backer, my mortgage company, was like, "That's fine, we still back you. Your numbers are great." And then this requirement came down, and it kind of just put everything on hold real fast.
Yeah, there's no winners in that. That's tough.
Yeah. Allison, good luck.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks for the call. Wish we were saying congratulations, but.
Me too. I'd be closing tomorrow if that was the fact. Aww. So.
Well, thanks for your call. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too.
Let's
see. We've got a couple emails. One, Lisa in Victorian Village asks, how does the fact that OSU has sent all the students home to learn virtually impact Central Ohio real estate? Fewer students graduating and staying in Columbus after graduating has to have an impact. And if 30,000 students go back to their hometowns, will they end up staying there? How does this impact the rental market? You want to take a swipe at that, Rob Vogt?
Yeah, sure. I think it's going to have a dramatic effect on it. Again, trying to figure this whole thing out on where we end up is the big question mark right now. We had a lot of apartments built near campus recently. Mm-hmm. And when you've got all of those folks who have headed for home, it's going to have a huge impact on it. The question becomes is what are the landlords going to do in terms of the signed lease? Are they going to enforce that? Could be tough with a student who doesn't have an obligation to it. And then, the fact that we have so many fewer folks to occupy apartments is going to have a direct impact on the overall housing market or the rental housing market. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a negative effect on the overall rental housing market.
Yeah, I wonder if staying in Columbus, how important that will be for them, because when this all comes back, in my opinion, I think Columbus will come back stronger than if they are moving back to a much smaller hometown.
Agreed.
That may never come back or come back. So I think them staying put, getting a rental, is probably going to be better to be here in this great city.
Boy, Todd, wow. You're working for the chamber.
Yeah, you're working for the chamber.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Matthew in Licking County, you're on the air. Hi, Matthew.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay. So I'm actually a real estate appraiser. I've been appraising residential real estate for 20 years now. So mine is really just more of a comment than a question for the panel. you know, you get taught from an early appraisal standpoint that appraising and housing in particular, each property is absolutely unique. I am appraising today in rural Licking County, where the subject that I'm appraising is remodeled and has multiple offers. There's always going to be properties and areas that are going to outperform others, in my opinion. But I'm thinking back to the 05, 06 real estate bust. And at the time, if I'm not appraising something for a purchase, I'm actually appraising it for a foreclosure reason. Mm. So I kind of get both sides of it. I'm fortunate that what I do, at least from Governor DeWine's standpoint, and the lenders, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, to keep housing markets liquid, you know, my product and my service is deemed essential. But it's a personal choice to go out with COVID. But long before the guidelines came out, I was wearing a mask and gloves because I'm fortunate in the position that I am still working, but there's still always a risk involved at any time, really, but more so now. But I don't want to touch anything if I don't have to, you know, but even if it is occupied, I want folks to be in another room. You know, I want them to open up all the doors, turn on all the lights, but I'm not touching it without a certain amount of security or asking whoever might be there today. It's vacant. Mm-hmm. But I sort of get it coming going, but it's always the appraiser's fault if it doesn't appraise.
It is.
So
about time you take credit for that.
Own it, Matthew.
I'm a bad guy, and I take pride in it. No, not really. I mean, I don't want to. I just interpret the market at that time, but it's changing quickly, and the next one might not have multiple offers. So in certain price points in certain areas, under 200,000, in certain markets, especially where there's a good school system, mm-hmm. and much as Cynthia and other of the panel have said, though, that's very unique. So the competition is very high, and that's where you're seeing, if it's not stable, it is increasing because of the number of people that want the property. And today's property, again, rural Licking County, a little bit different, but multiple offers because it's been completely remodeled.
Right.
Matthew.
Let's get. We were just about out of time. I wanted to get some feedback from our panel. So, who wants to talk first?
Well, Ann, I think it just goes to the point that we just don't know where we're going to end up with this whole thing. And you know, an appraiser in rural Licking County, I would think there'd be a pretty good demand for housing right now in these rural areas where folks are just nervous about what's going to happen in the future. So I get back to my original point that we're just trying to feel our way through this whole process, and it's going to just take some time.
I want to thank you, Matthew, for that. And I want to break my own rule and take a quick call from Becky. Becky, can you tell us your problem in about 15 or 10 seconds?
Real quickly. We decided not to put my name on a refinance way back, and I've been paying for the house the whole time. I work in contract, so my job comes and goes. My husband passed away, okay? Now the house is in my name. I have never purchased a house before in my life. Can I be considered a first-time buyer? And,
good question.
Can I convince somebody to refinance me since my jobs are so spotty?
Okay. So real quick, running out.
You would not be considered first-time because you were on the title.
Yeah.
So you have ownership of a property. But again, if you're thinking of selling it, you'll have some equity for your next home if that was what you're considering.
Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Cynthia McKenzie with Keller Williams Capital Partners and CIMAC Group, and Rob Vogt, analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights. Thank you all for your help today. It was great hearing from you.
Thank you, Ann.
Have a great day.
Thanks, everybody else, for listening. Thanks for all your great questions. Thanks to the All-Side staff, our producers, Aaron Esmont, Matthew Rand, Atiyah Turi, Bobby Gerberic, and Max Garrison, our interns. Take care. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.